Hello and welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns. I'm Peter Lavelle. Here we discuss some real news. Is Europe preparing for direct military conflict with Russia? Evidence suggests the answer is yes. Also, international law and the real global community is working to hold Israel to account. How much isolation is the U.S. willing to accept? To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And in Marrakesh, we have Martin Jay. He is an award-winning journalist and commentator. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start out with George in Budapest. Over the last week particularly, we have seen these rumors of war, as it were, coming from particularly someone like the Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban, but many, many others. And the obviously escalation of the conflict in Ukraine is on the agenda as Ukraine continues to falter. I think as we speak right now, they're opening up the jails in Ukraine for convicts to go to the front. We have a plethora of videos of circulating online of the continued hunt for cannon fodder to send to the front. And we have people like David Cameron, green light, use those weapons deep into Russia, British ones, by the way, and Anthony Blinken, the State Department, the Secretary of State, trying to corral people into some kind of forceful agenda to escalate even more. George, where is this all going? Is this a, because the way I think you can interpret it in many ways, that, you know, they're unrelenting, unwilling to accept that this whole project was a farce from the beginning, or this is an opportunity to mobilize the West for a very long-term agenda and not just against Russia. George?
Well, that's a very good point, Peter. And I think the answer is both.
Yes.
The Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban's interview a couple of days ago was very interesting because he says, look, Hungary is taking part in these NATO meetings. And I can tell you that in these meetings, they are planning for NATO involvement in Ukraine. And he said that, you know, if this continues, essentially, Hungary will have to opt out. Now, he didn't exactly spell out what it means opt out, but one would have to say, but de facto, Hungary would just simply cease to be a member of NATO. But he's saying that, and he said this explicitly, that Europe is now in the situation it was in 1914 and in 1939. It's on the brink of a world war. And then you have to say, well, why is that? And then you talk about this, the crisis in Ukraine. The problem arises that when do wars break out? Well, wars break out when great powers refuse to give up. They can't give up because if they give up, they cease to be great powers. They will be seen to be paper tigers, and therefore they just have to go home and lick their wounds. Great powers are very reluctant to do that, and hence the escalation of this rhetoric. I mean, one of the things you didn't mention was, of course, our good friend, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg, gave an interview to The Economist in which he also said, yeah, absolutely, we have to take off all restrictions on the use of U.S. and any missiles given to Ukraine. But NATO is still not a party to the conflict. And now we have the outgoing UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak announcing what he's going to introduce: national service,
conscription.
Exactly, conscription. And now it's true he's unlikely to win, and it's true that Labour has criticised him. However, Labour is the anointed one. He's obviously they're going to be the prime minister. That doesn't mean Labour itself is not going to introduce this in due course. So everyone is getting ready for war. And why? Because they cannot admit to losing. Because you lose, then basically, you know, NATO's done.
It's interesting because, you know, you made reference to the interview that the Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban made with The Economist. Martin, I mean, he's absolutely right. I mean, looking at the precursors of the conflict of World War I and World War II. But I think everybody needs to stand back here is that this is a conflict that NATO European countries want. I mean, Russia is not attacking any of these countries whatsoever. There is no impending invasion of Western Europe by Russia. There's no I mean, even the biggest proponents for Ukraine would probably wouldn't admit that, at least not impending right now. I mean, this is a craven choice on the part of European elites and American elites, is to prepare for a war that they want. Go ahead, Martin.
They've got nowhere else to go. I mean, that's really the problem. You know, they've backed themselves into this corner whereby now they've run out of new plans, new ideas. And now what is the real point, the real objective now of these elites is just self-preservation. You know, and unfortunately...
Well, particularly the Ukrainian elite, I would say. But
well,
keep going.
That's something else, yeah. But I'm talking about European leaders. You know, how do people like Scholz... and Macron and others, you know, keep their political base when even the most misinformed Frenchman or German can see that we're losing in Ukraine and Russia is gaining. And at a certain point, there will be a tipping point where minds will be focused and the talk of World War III will be a reality rather than just a narrative. I think we are edging closer to it. Just recently, the Russian ambassador in London told a British MP that we know that your storm shadows are being fired by British SAS soldiers. We know you didn't train Ukrainians. You sent your own people to operate them. I think if America follows through with that, with its own equipment and actually sends its own soldiers to fire them, you know, we're a cigarette paper away from a World War III scenario, aren't we? You know, and very, very dangerous talk for Cameron and others to talk about hitting inside Russia. You know, how much can Putin take? You know, I mean, even he has a breaking point. His generals will be arguing for a much more decisive policy against NATO because it's NATO that's doing this. But, you know, amidst all of this, what I see from a distance, I suppose, is lack of dialogue, lack of debate, lack of effective, you know, press coverage, you know. And what happens is when you completely clamp down on all this, when you start arresting journalists or you ostracize them for taking a different line, you know, what happens is the elites start to believe their own BS. And this is really part of this story, is that, you know, just recently, last week, there were some Azov Brigade soldiers in the British Parliament. You know, shameful, absolutely shameful. And not one British newspaper wrote.
Well, also, we had the Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, sitting in a pizzeria in Kiev with his counterpart with Nazi regalia on the walls. OK, I mean, George, you know, Antony Blinken went to Israel as a Jew. Is he a Jew when he visits Kiev, when you see Nazi regalia? George, when Reuters is reporting number of reports, OK, that Putin has agreed to freeze the conflict. Okay, I would like to read, you know, I'd like to see those reports myself, because I think everyone, obviously, we want to see the conflict come to an end. Freezing the conflict plus neutrality plus change of regime, they don't mention that. They just talk about one thing here. But it's really interesting when we go back to the interview that Putin had with Tucker Carlson. Why don't you just test the Russians? If you want to freeze the conflict, tell me more. But they won't even do that, George.
Well, that's exactly right, Peter. And I don't think that, obviously, we don't know whether that Reuters report is true, but it's not implausible, because really there is only one party that is the grown up in the room, and that's Putin. And Putin does not want a world war. He thinks this is crazy to escalate towards that. And so I think he's putting forward, I find it plausible that he would put forward a scenario that he thinks the West can accept without feeling that they've been humiliated, without feeling that they now cease to be a great power. So look, you know, if we freeze it along these lines, you know, you can at least say that you've got something, we can say we've got something, and then we can bring this very dangerous confrontation to an end. The problem is that there are no takers. And this goes back again to the discussions at Minsk and then at Istanbul. Russia made enormous concessions, really very unfavorable to Russia. And it was the West that said, no, we can go all the way. We can actually inflict a total devastating strategic defeat on Russia, total humiliation for Russia, and we can get away with it. And of course, you can't, but for the same reason, you can't just simply defeat and humiliate a great power. But it was the West that acted irresponsibly, and it's the West now then instead of actually engaging in a serious dialogue, because Russia is clearly open to a dialogue, they have this nonsensical peace conference in Switzerland, to which Russia hasn't been invited. They say this is entirely a public relations exercise, nothing to do with a peace conference, but just simply repeat, oh, we want to, you know, the Zelensky peace plan, which involves Russian capitulation.
You know, Martin, it's very interesting. We've heard repeatedly, particularly from the likes of the French President Macron, you know, Russia should not be allowed to win. Well, that is a wish list. That is a political statement, but that doesn't have anything to do with security moving forward. And that's always been the key issue that the West never really will admit is at the core of all of this, Russia's security demands. And we had this process during the Cold War, the OSCE, we had the Helsinki process. No one in the West, no takers, as George said. Go ahead, Martin.
Yeah, are there going to be takers now? You know, it doesn't seem to be so. I think we have to wait for something quite catastrophic to happen before heads are banged together at NATO level and EU level for people to actually start talking about the realities of what we can do. You know, NATO can't win this war. What it's now looking at, some leaders, I mean, I've been told by some of my MOD sources in the UK that some ministers in the British government are now saying we need to get out of Ukraine. So at least people are now starting to say, look, the reality is that this is a war that can't be won. Can it be a war where there can be some dignity and some grace in losing? You know, can we step back from it? But I don't see any real obvious scenarios. You know, I think we're going round and round in circles. And I don't think NATO is the body, really. It doesn't have the people in it who can really look at this realistically and come up with anything intelligent. You know, I think there are a number of oxymorons at play here. Even the narrative, you know, we keep hearing Russia is coming. But that narrative is really nonsense, because the people who bang the drum and say that are the same countries that have completely depleted their own stocks of hardware. So, you know, you obviously don't believe in that.
Well, I mean, another indicator, George, last 30 seconds here, is that Victoria Nuland is suddenly back in the news. I mean, you know, she's dislodged from her perch, but she is actually leading the fight for the military-industrial complex and the neocons. 15 seconds, George.
Yeah, no, she's also echoing, this is the new talking point, no restraints at all on the use of missiles. And that's why everybody is on board for that. Just going back to what Martin was saying, that Tory MP who said that it's the British who are actually firing the Storm Shadow missiles also says that with the new Keir Starmer government, actually we will be told that we are at war. He said that.
All right. On that dreadful thought, gentlemen, we have to go to a hard break. And after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news, staying with RT.
Hi, I'm Rick Sanchez. And I'm here to plead with you, whatever you do, do not watch my new show. Seriously, why watch something that's so different? Why listen to opinions that you won't get anywhere else? Look, if it pleases you to have the State Department, the CIA, weapons makers, multi-billion dollar corporations choose your facts for you, go ahead. Why change? And whatever you do, don't watch my show. Stay mainstream, because I'm probably going to make you uncomfortable. My show is called Direct Impact. But again, you probably don't want to watch it, because it might just change the way you think.
I'm Scott Bennett. I'm former United States Army psychological warfare officer who served in the State Department counterterrorism office under Ambassador Del Daley. Warrior.
Wanted to come here to Russia in the Donbass area and gather the facts to take back to the American people. Well, Donbass is the front lines. This is where the bombs and the bullets are raging. This is where people are dying. This is where the buildings are exploding. I want wanted to see firsthand the scars of war.
Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns. I'm Peter Lavelle. Here we're discussing some real news. Martin, I guess, you know, you and I and George have been observers of politics for our entire adult lives, okay? And I never thought in my wildest imagination that the ICJ and the ICC would be so focused on the activities of Israel and its illegal behavior and its onslaught on Gaza. But here we are right now. The problem with all of this is that the Israel is isolated, but it's been isolated for much of its existence. Is a pariah. Many countries in the world have always considered it a pariah. Not a big difference, okay? Maybe in magnitude and maybe in breadth, but Israel has been used to that status. The United States is not, okay? And the problem that is facing the United States and its closest allies is that the more and more that the genocide conventions are studied and applied, then you have complicity, and those that are complicit are in the same category as committing genocide itself. This is something the Western world is slowly and terrifyingly waking up to. Go ahead, Martin.
Waking up to, and also I think realizing that the more we go down this road and the more that we start issuing these writs from the ICJ to Netanyahu and others, you know, and the more America shows us really what it's all about. What is the ICJ for America? It's America's own tool for hegemony. Nothing more, nothing less. And I think it was Lindsey Graham who said recently in a some sort of congressional meeting, you know, if they're going for Netanyahu and Israelis, then will it be us next? And I think that really...
Martin, if I can interrupt, that was during a congressional hearing, and there were protesters in the crowd witnessing that committee's proceedings, and they applauded it. And he said, go ahead, you can applaud it if you want. That was an amazing moment. Sorry for the interruption.
It was absolutely amazing because it really let the cat out of the bag now. Now there is clarity now. You know, in the last few weeks, we've all been scratching our heads wondering, you know, where is this all heading? And really, and I said to you, I think at the very beginning of the conflict on this show, I said, the credibility of the ICJ will really be held now. It'll be a real issue now, but at the very beginning when it had its ruling a couple of months ago, you know, I think that point now is affirmed even more. You know, I'm not patting myself on the back for my prescience. What I'm saying is that if the ICJ loses its credibility, you know, other huge institutions around the world, I think, are going to follow, because Global South leaders are just looking at these institutions and saying, well, if that's just there, just to help America squeeze better deals, manipulate people, throw people into jail they can't have assassinated, you know, then why should we even be part of it? And what happens is that just accentuates a momentum towards BRICS, towards the East, you know. So I think these recent announcements by the Biden administration following the legal case, which is building up now by the ICJ, I think that's a really bad signal towards huge Western controlled institutions.
Well, I mean, but Martin, if you look at the ICJ, you know, I'm going to George right now. I mean, these are all inventions of the West in the post World War II, post Nuremberg environment. These are all Western institutions. I mean, and particularly the ICC, you know, the International Caucasian Court, which so many people call it. But I mean, it's just not these institutions. It is the legitimacy of the West to continue to lead and make the demand that they have the right to lead, because they stand taller and they see further and all this other nonsense that we've heard. That is all at stake right now. It's just not institutions. It's just the very legitimacy of the Western experiment for the human race. George.
Oh, you're absolutely right, Peter. And just going back to your original question, which was that, well, yes, Israel has often been isolated in the international community, but not the United States. And what's really going on now is really a kind of a self-inflicted wound on the part of the United States, because there's no reason for it. Because, you know, yes, obviously the United States is in the business of being the global hegemon, wants to dominate the world, you know, full spectrum dominance. That's always what the United States has been about. But this unremitting support for Israel stands in the way of that. Because Israel, for many, many reasons, antagonizes an awful lot of countries. Israel is completely isolated in the Middle East. It has been at war with its neighbors ever since its foundation. That isn't likely to change anytime soon. And America is on board with that, and you know, in exchange for nothing. So America isolates itself and for goals that actually achieve nothing for the United States. And so now it's issuing threats against the International Criminal Court. Doubtless it will also start issuing threats against the International Court of Justice. And if that stands in the way of American global hegemony, because there are plenty of powers who are more than happy to be American client states, do with America's bidding, but not on this issue.
Yes.
Particularly in the Middle East. On this issue, they can't follow the United States. So it's quite an extraordinary kind of self-inflicted wound that the United States apparently wants to deepen and make even more dangerous for itself.
Well, you know, and because Martin, Israel does what it does because it feels it has the privilege of impunity. And because it has American backing, it's always shielded. But that's why this happens. This is something the United States has allowed since the inception of Israel, particularly since the 67 war. And now it's coming back to haunt them, because this is not only, as George says, you know, what does the U.S. get out of this when it looks at its global hegemonic reach? Not much. As a matter of fact, it's negative returns. But now this is impacting domestic politics in the Western world, where you see these huge divisions going on. And it's quite terrifying. You know, I mean, when, you know, George and I covered Russiagate thoroughly. There was a new McCarthyism. What's going on now puts that level of McCarthyism, it's small potatoes in comparison. And for what? Okay. So this impunity is destroying the very fabrics of the ideals, the values that we claim to hold. Go ahead, Martin.
Yeah, well, I think Nixon put it very well when he was talking about the book he wrote. He said, you know, we don't really get much out of the relationship with Israel. And the main reason why we're so close to the Israelis is because of the Holocaust, because of the history, you know. But I think to take George's point, put so very well, you know, self-inflicting wound, certainly, and one that is gaping now. But it won't be the Biden administration that looks at this with any objective perspective. They won't get the helicopter view and think about the implications of the next 10 or 20 years. It might be the next generation of politicians and leaders in America who question this relationship. You know, in the old days, it was, well, we need Israel in the Middle East because if the sort of rebellious children, otherwise known as the Arab states, become a little bit naughty and a bit difficult to deal with, Israel will be there to crack the whip and show the rest of the region, you know, who's really running the show. But,
well,
you know,
and also, Martin, you know, the end of the Soviet Union, George, this has impacted the greater Middle East amazingly, because Israel was within the context of a Cold War rivalry. When that disappears, that's when it became actually far more dangerous, because Israel, because of its sense of impunity, would be able to pursue its goals, the West Bank, for example, and now attacking Gaza repeatedly. If we'd been in a Cold War environment, it's doubtful that would have happened. George.
No, that's exactly right. And it's very interesting, because if you go back to the Cold War mentality, it was really Henry Kissinger who define the issues in the Middle East in terms of the Cold War. Somehow Israel is the West, the satellite, or, you know, waging a Soviet-sponsored anti-Western war. And of course, it was nonsensical. It was nonsensical at the time. And essentially, Nixon did not agree with that analysis of the Middle East. And certainly his Secretary of State, William Rogers, did not take that view. But that was Kissinger. And he kind of foisted this idea onto the United States that the reason why we're providing Israel with this unquestioned, unremitting support is that Israel is fighting the Cold War against Soviet aggression on our our behalf. Then, of course, once the Cold War ended, you had to invent new things. And so, you know, now it's the Islamic jihad and global Islamic revolution. Now it's apparently wokeism, global wokeism, and Israel is in the forefront of the fight, or Israel is in the fight for national sovereignty against globalism. There's always some new fight that Israel is in the leader of. But of course, it isn't. Then it's just a way of avoiding ever talking about what the real issues are in the Middle East. And that's why, and this goes on, this, you know, inventing these new ideologies about why we have to support Israel unconditionally.
Martin, we have the UK elections coming up very, very soon. How is this issue with Israel-Palestine and the ICJ playing out in that election, if at all?
It's going to have a huge impact on both of the huge blocs, because it's the general perception is that Labour are going to get hammered because of their ridiculous, servile support of the genocide on Israel's side. But also, I think the Tories will be hit very hard on it because of their lack of decision, their lack of strategy on a whole lot of other issues. Palestine, Middle East is just one of them. What's going to happen is the Labour Party is going to be split right down the middle by Jeremy Corbyn, now looking to be rallying to perhaps try and make some sort of stand against old Labour votes. We know the Tories are going to be desecrated, you know, so I think the emergence now of smaller parties like George Galloway's, but others as well, you know, I think is going to be a real issue. You know, we it's been so long since we've had real foreign policy that makes any sense, and it's been so long since we've been able to distance ourselves from America, you know, that I think people are sick to death of really having foreign ministers in a British government who are basically working for the State Department. You know, so I think Israel and Palestine will be an issue, a big issue, but I think it will hit Labour harder than...
Well, in the same question that George, with we have November elections coming up, what's the difference between Trump and Biden when it comes to this issue? I ask that because I know it's a short answer.
not much, but that's an interesting question. What we've seen in the last few weeks have been big donors, hedge fund managers, people who didn't like Trump are now suddenly moving towards Trump because they think Biden is betraying Israel. Biden is throwing Israel under the bus, and they think Trump will be a more reliable friend of Israel. And that could be very interesting.
I think what it tells us is this Zionist ideology has just corrupted Western politics to the core, unfortunately. Gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Marrakesh and in Budapest. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.